What happens when your life is on the line, like literally hinges on proving what your mental state was at the time of a crime, but you can't afford the expert witness that you need to prove it? Like, does it become something that only the wealthy can afford? Today, we're going deep on Aki v. Oklahoma. It's a landmark Supreme Court case, and we're going to be talking about how it really reshaped the legal world, especially for defendants facing serious charges where, you know, their mental state is a really key part of their defense.
Aki v. Oklahoma, it shines a light on this really tricky area, right? This tension that we have between wanting a fair trial for everybody and the reality that resources in our legal system are limited. So it really begs the question, right? Can justice truly be blind when you have certain defendants who just they can't afford what they need to fight for their lives?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start with the story of Glenn Burton Adick. He was charged with a truly horrific crime, murdering a couple and wounding their two children in Oklahoma, and this was back in 1979. And right from the start, his behavior in court was so strange that the judge ordered a psychiatric evaluation just to see if Ike was even mentally fit to stand trial.
And what's really interesting is that that evaluation revealed that Ike was suffering from paranoid schizophrenia. And so, because of this, the court found that he was not competent to stand trial, and they ordered him to a state mental hospital for treatment.
So after months of treatment, Ike was deemed competent to stand trial. But here's where things get a little tricky. His attorney wanted to argue that Ike was insane at the time of the crimes, meaning, he couldn't be held responsible for his actions. But there was a catch. Ike couldn't afford to hire his own psychiatrist to come and evaluate him and build his defense.
And this is really where that core legal question that we're talking about today comes in, right? The trial court said no to Ike's request for the state to provide a psychiatrist. And they wanted the psychiatrist provided at the state's expense. So, just try to imagine you're facing a potential death sentence. You don't have the expert help that you so desperately need simply because you can't afford it.
It gets even more intense, actually, because during the sentencing phase, the prosecution brought in their own psychiatrist. And these psychiatrists testified that Ikey was a future danger to society, which is a huge factor in death penalty cases. But Ikey, he didn't have an expert, so there was really no way for him to counter these claims. And these were claims that, could very much alter the course of his life.
And this is where the Supreme Court, they enter the picture. And they have to grapple with this question that's going to affect so many cases going forward. Does it actually require states to give psychiatric help to defendants who can't afford it when their mental state is a cornerstone of their defense? And in a really landmark decision, the court said yes.
So the court used it's kind of like a balancing test. They took it from a previous case, Matthews v. Eldridge, and they used this to weigh the individual's rights against, what the state's interests are. And I think maybe an example might help here. So imagine you're accused of stealing a car, okay? And the court has to decide if they're going to grant you bail while you're waiting for your trial. So they have to balance your right to freedom with the risk that you might run away. And to figure this out, they're going to consider things like how serious is the crime, what are your ties to the community, and how strong is the evidence. So the IK case uses a similar idea, this balancing test. They looked at what was at stake for Ikey, and in this case, it was his life. And then they had to decide if it was unreasonable to expect the state to provide a psychiatrist. And they said it wasn't.
And importantly, what the court recognized was that if Ike was denied this help, this psychiatric help, there was a very real chance that they could get the verdict wrong. And Justice Marshall, he wrote the majority opinion in this case, and he really made this clear. He said, "The defendant's interest in accuracy is uniquely compelling." It's like what the court was saying is that if the defendant's mental state is such a central part of the case, denying them the resources to prove their side makes things really uneven. It's not a fair fight anymore.
And this wasn't just like a symbolic victory either. This eight decision, it had some teeth. It actually led to the creation of what we know now as the Ake test. And the Ake test is a set of rules that the courts can use to decide when a defendant have the right to get psychiatric assistance. And these rules include things like, does the defense really hinge on the defendant's mental state? How have they been behaving? And also, what are the specific laws of that state?
And the ACT test, what it does is it makes sure that this right isn't just something we talk about, but that it's actually used fairly in courts across the country. But of course, anytime you have a big Supreme Court decision, you're going to have people who push back. And Justice Rehnquist, he was one of those people. He argued that the majority went too far with this ruling. He actually believed that due process, you know, just basic fairness, that it only required an independent evaluation, not necessarily this whole dedicated defense consultant paid for by the state.
So even within the court itself, you know, the highest court in the land, they had different opinions on how far this right should actually go. And it really makes you wonder what kind of impact ACFI Oklahoma has had, you know, especially now, as our understanding of mental health and how it affects people's behavior continues to change.
So the ACFI case, it brings up this big question, right? How do we make sure the system is fair when we're dealing with all this specialized knowledge that a lot of defendants just can't afford?
All right. It's like we had this idea, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But then when someone can't afford a good lawyer, especially when we're talking about mental health stuff, the system can feel like it's working against them from the very beginning.
And, you know, the thing about the Ike ruling is that it didn't just say, OK, you get a psych evaluation. It went further than that. Yeah. It recognized that having a psychiatrist who can help with your defense, that's really important, too.
So it's not just like a doctor coming in and saying, yep, this person's got a mental illness. It's about having someone who can really explain how the illness connects to the crime.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. The court understood that a psychiatrist could be really key in explaining, you know, complex medical stuff to the jury, helping them understand how a mental illness might have affected what the defendant did and what their state of mind was at the time.
It makes you think about how much power an expert witness can have in court. It's not just about the facts. It's about telling a story the jury can understand, a story they can even maybe connect with on some level.
And that becomes super important when you have the prosecution using, you know, psychiatric testimony to try and get harsher punishments, just like what happened in Arkeek's case. The state brought in their experts to argue that he was dangerous, a danger to society, and that had a big influence on him getting the death penalty. But because he didn't have his own expert to, you know, give the other side of the story, he couldn't really fight back against these claims.
So really what the Arkeek's is showing us is how important it is for both sides to have a real chance to present their case. I mean, that's like the foundation of our legal system, right?
Totally. And to have that fairness, you have to have access to the things you need to build a strong defense. And that includes expert testimony when it's relevant.
But let's be real for a second. We know the legal system, especially for people who can't afford a lawyer, it's already stretched thin.
Yeah.
So how has the Arkeek ruling actually worked in the real world, you know, with all these limitations?
That's the question, isn't it? I mean, the Axe decision definitely expanded people's rights, but it also started this debate about how to actually make it work without putting too much strain on resources that are already limited. Like, who exactly counts as an expert under Axe? How much help does the state really have to give? And how do you make sure the court-appointed experts are, you know, actually good?
And it's not even just about the money. I mean, there's the issue of finding enough qualified mental health professionals who are actually willing to do this work,
mm-hmm.
especially in rural areas or for defendants who are facing really serious charges. It's messy.
Yeah.
It's complicated. There are no easy answers.
It really is. And while Eck focused mostly on death penalty cases, it's made people ask some important questions about this right to expert help.
Right.
Like, does it apply to other kinds of criminal cases? And what about other areas of expertise?
So, like, say you have someone accused of some big financial crime, right? And they need a forensic accountant to go through all these records. Does Ike apply there too? Or what about a case where it all comes down to DNA evidence? Does the state have to provide a defense expert in those cases as well?
Those are really good questions, and they're still being debated in courts all over the place. What Ike did was open the door to this much bigger conversation about how to make sure things are fair. How do we make sure everyone has access to justice in a world where knowing this specialized stuff is becoming so important in legal cases?
It highlights that tension, right?
Yeah.
Between wanting equal justice for everyone and the challenges of actually making that happen in real life.
Yeah.
For everyone, no matter who they are or how much money they have.
Yeah, absolutely. And it gets even more complicated when you're talking about mental health. There's still so much stigma, so much misunderstanding,
yeah. And
there's never enough funding.
It's not just about legal rights. It's about remembering that there are real people at the center of these cases.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And that brings us right back to that fundamental question from Ake Ray. Can we really say we have a just system if we're not making sure everyone has a fair shot at defending themselves, especially when it's their mental state that's being questioned?
And that question It's just as important today as it was back in 1985 when the Supreme Court made its decision in Ike v. Oklahoma. Okay, so we've talked a lot about the impact of Ike v. Oklahoma, and we've seen all the complexities that it, you know, really brings up, but where do we go from here? I mean, what are the lessons that we can learn from this case, and how can we use those lessons to build a better system, a fairer system for everyone?
You know, that's the core of it all, isn't it? Ike v. Oklahoma wasn't just about one guy, right? One defendant or some, you know, specific legal problem. It was about the very idea of justice. You know, what does that even mean? It made us face the fact that a fair trial isn't a guarantee. It's something we have to really work for, something we have to keep making better.
Yeah. And it showed us this tension in our system. I mean, we say innocent until proven guilty, right? But then in reality, for people who can't afford a good lawyer, especially when it comes to mental health, it can feel like the system is against them right from the start.
And what's so interesting is that Ike, it kind of opened up this whole can of worms. All these questions we're still trying to figure out. Like,
yeah.
The Ike test, it gives us some rules, but it doesn't cover everything about mental health. How do we decide when someone's mental health actually affects, you know, whether they're responsible for what they did? What about when someone might be faking it, you know, trying to get out of trouble?
Yeah, it's a tough one for sure. And it brings up some big questions about expert witnesses, right? Mm. Like, how do we make sure they're being objective, that they're giving reliable testimony and not just trying to win for their side?
Oh, absolutely. And that's an issue that comes up a lot in law, not just with mental health. But Ike really shines a light on how important it is to have strong standards, you know? Ethical guidelines for those expert witnesses. Mm. We got to protect the integrity of the whole legal process.
It also shows how crucial it is to have enough money for public defenders and all those other resources that help people who can't afford a lawyer. I mean, without proper funding, it's hard to imagine how the promises of Ike can really become reality.
Right. You're hitting the nail on the head. And we can't forget the bigger picture here. Ike forces us to look at how we think about mental health as a society. Do we see it as something that maybe explains a person's actions, something that deserves compassion? Or do we see it as something scary, something that needs to be punished? Our legal system, it reflects our values. And Ike challenges us to live up to those values of fairness and justice that we talk about.
It's a really powerful reminder that justice, it's not just about rules and procedures, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's about people's lives. It's about how we treat the people who are most vulnerable in our society. Ike v. Oklahoma, it serves as this huge reminder of how important it is to keep fighting for a system where everyone has a fair chance, no matter what their circumstances are.
And that's really the legacy of Ike v. Oklahoma. It's not just a case about getting psychiatric help. It's a case about constantly striving for a society that's more just and more equitable. And it leaves us with a question, something to think about. If this right to expert assistance goes beyond psychiatry, where do we draw the line? You know, what other areas of expertise should we consider essential for a fair trial? And how do we balance those rights with the fact that, you know, resources are always going to be limited? These are really tough questions. I don't have easy answers. But they're the questions we need to keep asking if we want a legal system that truly lives up to its name.
Well, that's a perfect place to wrap things up for today. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Ike v. Oklahoma. It's a case that continues to shape our legal landscape, and it's one that really makes us think about what justice truly means.